Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is another amazing week. Mad World Toys comes on and rocks the house, from tattoo artist to kaiju creator. You get to see his elephant behemoth come to life before your eyes. Listen to the podcast and you're going to hear how we got from doing doodles and all kinds of stuff as a little kid to the point where we're making kaiju monsters that rock the house. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, subscribe, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. Keeps you up to date on us and helps us reach more people. If you want to follow on all socials, it's at Toys on Tap. And if you want to jump on the Patreon to support the show, patreon.com/toysontap. The Lucky Kaiju Claw Kickstarter pre-launch page is up. Please go take a look at that. And now, let's get back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
Hey,
what's up?
What's going on?
Dude, we finally made it happen.
Finally.
This is like a year in the making, but we're here.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I'm pumped. I'm sad that I was over at Last Bastion's booth, and I don't think I saw you over there, or I didn't like come say hi because I'm a douche or something. Something happened.
Yeah, man, DCon was such a whirlwind experience. I definitely saw you a couple of times, and usually when that happened, I was speaking to somebody.
Yeah.
Or it was like I had a free moment and you would like whiz by and I'm like, I'll catch him later.
Yeah. Yeah. You know who changed that dynamic for me? Neil Ewing. The first year that I went to DesignerCon, he was at a table, like one of those like 6 foot tables somewhere in the back. And I walked by, came to say hi. And then he was talking to someone and I went to walk away and he was like, "Hey, Abe, wait," and like finish this conversation. Yeah. So I stood there like a weirdo, but it just always.
And that's even awkward. Like,
yeah,
that was most of my DCon or just convention experiences. Like, I don't like to be rude and like interrupt when someone's clearly engaged in a conversation. So at that point I'll give up. I'll be like, I'll come back.
Yeah.
You know, at some point.
Yeah, that is so true. Plus, I don't want to like ruin a sale or like get in the way. That of too. That. I see people schmoozing all the time over there, and it's like, I could interrupt this for a second, but I'm not going to.
But it's, yeah, that's half the fun, though. It's just, I mean, especially for that being my first experience at DCon as a first year toy maker and designer, like, I was everywhere.
Yeah.
It's trying to have conversations, meet people, fans, collectors, other artists, people I've looked up to for years that are like, "Oh, you're a real person. I can engage in a conversation with you." I mean, that's half the fun, but
yeah,
it can definitely be daunting and a bit overwhelming when it's all new to you.
Yeah. It is crazy that you are a new toy maker, but I've seen your toy everywhere. So let's talk about that. I mean, that's crazy. We're going to get to that for sure.
Yeah.
Behind you, you did something. I have so much to ask you and talk to you about with it.
I got all the time in the world finally.
Awesome. Adam, it's good to have you on Toys on Tap. The first way that we start every podcast is introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
I did my homework watching some episodes leading up to this. Well, we'll start with the basics. My name is Adam Pasquale. I've been a professional tattooer going on 18 years now, I think February, which is crazy in and of itself. You know, on some days it feels like a blink of an eye, and other days it's like, oh my God, it feels like an eternity. It's been so long, especially with how much the industry has changed and progressed in such a short time over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, especially at the height of the incoming wave of all new social media between Instagram and TikTok and et cetera. But I've always been first and foremost an artist and creative ever since I was old enough to pick up a pencil or a crayon, marker, anything I could get my hands on. I was the weird kid in school. I was always drawing on my book covers, sketching in class, half paying attention to the teacher. The other half was like, oh, this is a really cool idea. This is a cool monster I could draw. Oh, let me see this dragon in this book. I could draw my own version of that. That's what I did. And a lot of my inspiration comes from my secondary passion, which is films. I've been a diehard film buff. I actually, after high school, went to Full Sail University in Florida, which is, they have a filmmaking program there. I wanted to be a filmmaker. That was like my main passion when I was a kid. But I mean, you want to talk about an industry that is ridiculously hard to get into. So that's definitely one of them. But films were definitely a huge inspiration for me and another outlet, not just for creativity, but as far as escapism for me. Like, I could always put a movie on and get lost in a new world and draw. So that's pretty much led me to this point in time in my life right now. And so I've always been creative minded, and I like drawing. I like checking out new things, new mediums.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
Yeah. Getting into it, you know, it's, I mean, this in and of itself was a huge learning experience for me. And it was overwhelming. But at the same time, it's the first time in a long time where creatively, there was a time where I kind of felt like I was in a bit of a rut, artistically speaking. You know, it happens with us from time to time. You kind of get lackadaisical, you know, doing the same thing day in and day out. And a lot of my friends at the time were just in the beginnings of creating their own toys and getting into that. You know, you've interviewed a few of them, you know.
Yeah.
Octeel and Vogel. I mean, the amount of inspiration I received ever since I became a collector and discovered this whole new world, I mean, it kind of helped give me that artistic boost that I had been desperately looking for so long. So that was an incredible experience for me, and it still is. I mean, I'm like you said, I'm, you know, it hasn't even been a full year yet. I'm just being tossed into the throes of it all, taking everything in for the first time. But it's been an awesome experience so far.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to ask, because you're an artist through and through. When tattoo artists become toy makers, my best friend's a tattoo artist, and it is an unfair advantage. Like, you guys know art well.
Yeah.
and most tattooers know,
I mean, it's our lifeblood, man.
Yeah.
That's all we have. What we have to offer.
Yeah. So tell me how it started. Tell me, when you were a kid, the cartoons you're watching, the toys you're collecting, what started that little artist bug in you?
Okay, I'll try to summarize this as best I can. I mean, my parents were never married, like, they were split. So yeah. Like, my mother had sole custody. Being a single mom, she worked a full-time job. Thankfully, we had help through, like, my grandparents. So I would, like, stay with them while my mother worked during the day. And I remember going down at the basement one day, and I found this huge cardboard box of old Betamax tapes.
Yeah.
You want to talk about going back? But it had all these titles written on it, and there are all these different movies. And, you know, that's my first moment of, like, my diving board moment of creativity. I'm like, you know, I grew up on classics from E.T. to Star Wars. I mean, when I saw RoboCop, I think I was maybe for the first time like 8 years old. Mm-hmm. That blew my mind. All the crazy practical effects in that movie. And then same thing with, like, Star Wars. That was Star Wars and E.T. were my first early obsessions. Again, due to the practical effects, the creature designs. I mean, there were so many interesting elements to take in that I'd never seen before. And, you know, I would I'll bring this up only because it's humorous. One of the first drawings that I did, I must have been maybe three.
Yeah.
It was a black Sharpie on a little white index card. I drew my own version of E.T. And my grandmother, being the wonderful, supportive human that she was, hung it up in the house, and it stayed there for decades. And every Christmas party, family, friend gathering, there was always a commotion. Like, it was very phallic. I'll just put it that way. They're like, why is there a penis drawing on the board? They're like, it's supposed to be ET.
Yeah.
So that, you're like, penis, you know, it all stemmed from that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And going back to my grandmother, I remember as a little kid, we had an old set of Encyclopedia Britannicas, like hardcover from like the 70s.
Yeah.
And inside those, it had a bunch of really well done full color illustrations of insects and animals and dinosaurs. And, you know, I would pester my grandmother to come sit with me while I would draw and watch her draw them. And then I would try to do the same thing. So my grandmother early on was a big supporter of me. Like, she knew I was a little different, a little creative. So she helped kind of guide me into being that. Yeah. And same goes for a lot of my family. I mean, growing up. So it all kind of started from a very early age of being expressive and artistic and creative and just having fun and being imaginative. But other things I grew up on watching, like I was a huge Voltron fan. Growing up, dude, as a kid, I love big robots.
I've never seen one episode of Voltron, but what? I love the robot. I love the robot.
Well, I mean, it depends which, like, the Americanized version is pretty, like, you know, it's like everything else cool that came overseas and we kind of bastardized it and like, all right, we're going to cut out all the story. Here's the characters. There's the enemy, monster, whatever, fight. And then end of episode.
Yeah.
I grew up on that, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, obviously was an obsession. I had every toy imaginable. Another huge one for me, and not many people remember this show, and the fact that it even existed and it was catered towards kids is amazing. You ever watch The Inhumanoids?
Is that the one where the guy, or there's a rhino that shoots something out of its horn?
No.
No.
When we're done with this interview, go on YouTube. You can watch all the episodes on YouTube.
I got to pull it up while we're talking so I don't forget.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Inhumanoids. Okay. Yeah. Like, there was a whole team that they called Earth Corps, and there were these three gigantic beasts that like rose from, you know, the depths of the earth. And like, there was one which was my particular favorite. It was a kaiju named Tendril.
Yeah. And these are sick.
Right. Look at the big, like, green, like gnarly looking green.
Yeah.
One,
with
the tusks. So that was, that particular monster kind of played a key role as a source of inspiration for my toy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least one of. But that was a definite favorite of mine growing up when I was a kid. But yeah, like stuff like that. Another thing I was really into, again, from an early age, you know, living with a single mom who wanted to watch adult-oriented movies. You know, she started me off like Halloween, you know, not super gory horror stuff. And then really I got into like Dawn of the Dead, Evil Dead, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Alien, you know.
Yeah.
I was a huge horror fan. John Carpenter's The Thing. So like sci-fi horror, I was really big into that stuff as a kid. I just liked weird things, you know. I'd like monsters and robots. I mean, what kid doesn't at a young age?
I mean, to go from doing that kind of stuff and having in this like single mother household to having a grandmother, right, that's pushing you towards everything is if only I could tell more and more people that you are cultivating young artists and you don't even know it yet. And to like grow up in that kind of a household and have that kind of stuff and then have this grandmother that's pushing you towards, like, incredible. And now we have this because of her.
Mm-hmm. And my aunt was another one. Like, she and I were like the Star Wars nerds. I remember in listening to some of your previous podcast interviews, like, I myself growing up was not a big comic geek.
Yeah.
Like, if on the occasion I might have purchased a comic when I was a kid, it was solely for the artwork. But I got really big into Spawn for a short time. And again, my aunt is also another creative, artistic-minded person, really big into photography. She made me a Spawn, my own Spawn costume one year for Halloween. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it goes back to that quote from Fight Club, a generation of men raised by women. Well, in my case, you know, the women in my life helped nurture and guide and discipline and hone me into being the person that I am today. And I'm eternally grateful for that.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
That's incredible. So,
yeah. It was great to have that level of support even from an early age.
Yeah. Does art kind of, like, as you're growing up, does art kind of take on and grab hold of you and never let go? Or is it like, because I mean, having some kind of artist bug and then going to high school and
figuring out. I mean, you always have the bug.
Yeah.
But I think the levels of influence sort of come at you in waves.
Yeah.
You know, like being a tattooer, like when I first got into tattooing, I didn't really know shit about tattooing. I just liked to draw. And I was sick and tired of the job that I was working at the time. I felt like an automaton. Like, yeah, I was making really, really good money at a young age, but I didn't give a shit about that. Like, I felt miserable. I had an urge that I wanted to go back because, like, the filmmaking thing didn't work out, which sucked. And I'm like, okay, I have an adult job making adult money. I have no other real responsibilities or interests or time for those. I'm miserable.
Yeah.
So the bug is always there. It never left. But yeah, when I got into tattooing, this was just before, like, very early beginnings of social media. I mean, this was back when you were lucky if you found a tattoo artist that had a MySpace account.
Yeah.
And like the select few, like, legends who were great, like, they had a full blown website. But, you know, again, like, most of the time you had to go to a store and buy magazines. And, you know, so during the first, like, 6 months of my apprenticeship, that's what I really took it upon myself to learn about tattooing and its history and influences that other artists had, different styles of tattooing. And even that's evolved now, especially, you know, with Instagram. And, you know, now you have unlimited access to a worldwide host of creative minds and artists of all different breeds. And, you know, it's, again, it like, the inspiration comes in waves. Like, trying to think the best way to describe this, like, aesthetically speaking, like, stylistically speaking, like, you know, you have your traditional realism, black and gray color, etc., etc., etc. You know, like, when you get to a certain point in your tattoo career where you develop the skills to, I think Octiel spoke about this, like, there was a point in time where, like, my artistic quality wasn't able to meet the expectations of my tattooing skills. So when I started tattooing, it was very basic. But it's important to, especially when you're trying something new, you need to master the basics. And that's going to build up your confidence and your muscle memory. And that's going to enable you to advance into the next level or whatever it is, whatever medium you're attacking. So that's kind of how I approach art. You know, sometimes I might love something and then after a while I get burnt out on it and I'm like, okay, I need to find something new.
Yeah. In high school, how did you express that? Because I mean, you're talking, you've been, I don't know how old you are. You've been,
I'm 40. I just turned 40 in September.
Okay. So since 22, you've been tattooing.
Yeah.
So right before that in high school, before like 18 to 15, something like that, how was art expressing itself then that leads you to finally say, like, God dang it, like, I could do this?
I mean, I had no interest at all in tattoos, like, growing up. Like, it didn't really interest me. I was more so gung-ho into the film direction at that point. But as far as expressing myself creatively throughout high school, I mean, I grew up in a small mountain town where it was, like, football. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like, I want to draw and paint cool things. And, like, we had an art class that was mainly an elective. Mm-hmm. So I took that. And thankfully, at least the two art teachers like we had at our school, like, they were awesome. And like, they each year they tried to bring in a new project for a type of different project for us to work on throughout the year that, you know, not just like drawing, painting, you know, then it could be clay sculpture, making your own paper from pulp and all that stuff, you know, So that was like the only real sense of like artistic expression or source of artistic expression that I could find was there. So if I had a certain project that I really wanted to excel at, that I really wanted to continue working on, like I would rush home from school. I would do all my BS homework for the other classes, hang out with my friends for a bit, be back home, eat dinner, family time. And then I would head upstairs to my room. I would put a movie in and I would jump in and I'd be up till 1, 2, sometimes 3 o'clock in the morning working on whatever art project I had.
Yeah, I'm getting lost in the hours.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'd watch movie after movie after movie and paint. And I'm like, oh, it's 3:30. I should probably sleep for a couple hours before I turn into a zombie going into school the next day.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it honestly wasn't until my senior year of school where reality kind of started to hit me a bit, where I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do?
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Like, I wasn't a sports fan, at least like I was growing up when I was a little kid, but that phased out once I became a teenager. And I was more of a hockey player growing up, but like my school was all about football. No one had a hockey program for miles and it was an expensive thing, which my family couldn't afford. So I'm like, there goes that. I'm not interested in anything else. I can't do an office job. No way. I would go stir crazy. So I was like, okay, that's my aunt found an article in a Rolling Stone magazine for the school I ended up attending after I graduated. And I'm thankful for that because it got me as far away from Pennsylvania as I possibly could get. It was in Florida and I had like the best year of my life as part of that program. I mean, unfortunately, didn't really amount to much in the grand scheme of things, but it allowed me to introduce myself to a whole wave of people outside of the mountain town I grew up in.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, there's culture and music and other things and expression, like things that weren't exactly encouraged.
Yeah. So. Going through high school and not knowing what you want to do after is the worst, especially if it has to do with art, like, or if there's like, you feel that bug, but you still don't know what you want to do. Cause it's still, we can say all day long that like, oh, the arts, like it's good now. People don't push you towards the arts still.
No, not at all. Even my high school, like guidance counselor, they're like, there's a radio TV program at your local community college. And so I went there and, even the people in that program were like, yeah, we're getting out of here. Like,
yeah,
if you want to do this, don't come here. Don't even waste your time. So that was like the challenging thing for me was like, well, what am I going to do? I'm like, I guess I'll get like a menial job until I figure something out. But yeah, it was not a fun time for me when that moment of realization came down. I'm like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I only want to do this, but how can I do this and make a living off it?
Yeah. I mean, I gotta know. So you walk in to get an apprenticeship at some point at like 22 years old.
Oh, so the guy who, my mentor who apprenticed me, I was introduced to him through an ex-girlfriend of mine and some other mutual friends. And I had been tattooed by him a few times. So we kind of already had somewhat of an established relationship. And like we got along, but it was funny because he and I were like opposite ends of the spectrum as far as like personas were concerned. But I always brought in like my sketchbook because half the stuff I had tattooed like were things that I drew, and like he would occasionally look through my book. And at the time, from when I was 19 up until I up and quit to move back home and start an apprenticeship, I worked as a cell tower technician.
Okay. Which is like climbing the towers?
So I was Comtrain certified, but I mean, I was the little guy. And, you know, I'm working with like, you know, 6'4", built like a brick shit house, like iron workers. So like they usually put me inside the monopole. So I'd be like hoisting, you know, thousands of feet of cable up, cutting in, rigging in ground kits. But yeah, I mean, it's a very dangerous job. Like it was a company my father at the time was the operations manager of, and everyone, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's the boss's son, he has it easy. I'm like, I got it worse than everybody. And because of how dangerous of a job that was, like, I still had to read like all the manuals that were like this thick. I had to take the tests. I had to become certified. Like, I had to know what I was doing. Otherwise, I'm putting not just my life, but others' lives in jeopardy. So I did that off and on for a few years. And eventually, I kind of befriended a lot of like the guys like on the crew and like other people he would bring in to help us finish a job site. So he was having me being trained as a sweep tester, which is like the nice cushy easy gig where you pretty much go in after all the hard work is done and make sure all the lines are tested positive and ready to go, and then you're on your way. And I was like, I can't wake up every day and do this. I'm not like, the money would be amazing and like I would have been set for life, but I'm like, I would feel empty inside. So I did the whole, you know, I really need to focus on my art right now, Dad. And I quit and moved back home. And I went to go get a tattoo by that same guy. And, you know, we struck up a conversation because, again, I had like my sketch pad and he was like looking through my stuff. He's like, man, he's like, you know, you have a really interesting, you know, aesthetic with like your work. He's like, I was like, yeah, thanks. Are you looking for any like help? Because I'm kind of in need of a job. Like, I just moved back to the area. And he's like, not unless you would like to learn how to tattoo. So I said, okay.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Like, I didn't even think about it. I was like,
just fell right into it.
It just fell. Yeah. I just kind of fell right into it. And he's like, okay. So within that first week of me moving back home, I got a tattoo and I went out and bought a car and I showed up to the shop every day and did that. And now I'm here.
Heck yeah.
18 years later.
I do have to ask, do you, one of the things that I do now, like I work full time and then do art and toys and podcast, everything on the side. Do you wish that early on you would have started out doing this cell tower stuff full time and then art on the side, like figured out a life balance there?
Oh, there is no life balance when you do that line of work. I mean, you're talking about I'm up every morning at 4:30. I might take a quick shit and shower, head across the street to the shop, load the trucks. And then, you know, most of the job sites, I mean, this was up in Connecticut. So we did jobs all through Connecticut, upstate New York.
Yeah.
Very rarely we went into the city, but, you know, sometimes then you're adding on another hour, hour and a half to the job site. And then sometimes you're doing multiple sites a day. So there were nights where, you know, you wouldn't get home till from between 8 till 11, sometimes midnight.
Oh, there's no extra time.
And you know, and when you have work, like there were stretches of like 2-3 weeks would go by where we didn't have a day off.
Oh.
And when it came time where you had a day off, I'm like, I'm going to be in a coma. For the next, you know, day while I have the chance to rest. And it's just go. So yeah,
that's
wild. There would have been no time for me to, so, unless there was a way I could not sleep. No.
Yeah. So you become the apprentice, which other tattooers know it as the shop bitch sometimes, which I hate that terminology. That's like,
thankfully I didn't have to deal with that.
Thank God. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad.
No, he, like, I mean, I still did everything. Like, I would show up 2 hours before the shop opened. I would literally sweep, dust, mop, clean.
But respectable.
Yes.
Okay, okay, good.
I you know, I wasn't hazed.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
we interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV-2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV-2. Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
He made sure, I mean, he was a businessman first and foremost.
Yeah.
Like, So his goal was to train me to be able to properly handle the simple walk-in stuff that he didn't want to do so he could focus on his other clients.
Yeah.
And get me tattooing. So, you know, it was, you know, I did all the usual shop stuff. I handled paperwork with incoming customers, greeting people, answering the phone, that shit, which fine. Like, I've worked retail. I could handle that in my sleep. No problem. Yeah. And then he, you know, again, like I kind of mentioned earlier, I took it upon myself to do my own research and study other tattooers and buy magazines. And I would literally draw all day, every day. And then, you know, some days he would pick a week where like, oh, today, you know, we're going to go over common things that you're going to experience people want. So like this week, you're going to draw a koi fish. You're going to swim it, have one day it'll be upstream. The next day it'll be downstream. All right. Then the day after that, you're going to add some water waves behind it and a background. Now you're going to add a flower and then you're going to do it all again. And you're going to add some lettering and make it all look cohesive. So like he would give me assignments that would challenge me artistically to get me prepared for what I was eventually going to have to deal with when it was time for me to start tattooing and deal with customers and be professional.
Insane.
So that's how that worked. And, you know, thankfully I had enough money set aside from cell tower work where I could just be at the shop all day, every day. I didn't have to worry about getting multiple part-time jobs and trying to work my schedule to be at the shop around that. I just dove head first right into everything. And I think I was tattooing in like 6 months.
Okay.
But again, nothing crazy. And if anything came in that I felt uncomfortable with, I wasn't going to run the risk of messing someone's skin up. So I'd be like, hey, I don't feel comfortable with this. You'd be like, no problem. I'd rather you do that than fuck it up.
Heck yeah. I mean, the first couple of years in tattooing, you're just learning a crazy amount. When do toys start creeping into your life again? Because they usually don't overlap, but in this scene, they always overlap.
Well, once I got better as a tattooer, and there was actually a point in time where and this goes back to talking about inspiration kind of coming in waves. There was a brief time where I took about 9 months off from tattooing. And this was after I just started kind of traveling more and doing conventions and like working alongside like the greatest artists that were like existing at that time and realizing my work sucks. So that inspired me to just take time off and draw and better myself as an artist. And this was right around the time when Instagram was like new, when it was just, you know, pictures of people's brunch and like artwork, you know, before all the influencer shit took over. And so I started meeting a lot of new tattooers who I was not familiar with through Instagram. And, you know, we exchanged dialogue, you know, I would do art trades with different tattooers, like all across the country. And then I started making art. I would sell prints. And that's kind of what I did to make a little money to kind of get me through this. And then I got a job again at a shop when I felt ready enough to get back to tattooing after feeling freshly inspired.
Yeah.
And then I got a really good job. I was making money again. And I've always been a collector. I've always loved toys. And I'm like, now that I have money, I want to start collecting some shit.
Yeah.
So my first thing that I really got into was Voltron again. And I had a massive vintage Voltron collection. I had everything you could think of, like not even just the stuff stateside. Like I had the original Japanese diecast versions. Like I would have one mint in box and one that was still in good shape, but out of box that I could display. So I kind of lean into that.
Why do I keep hearing I had? What's up?
Oh, yeah. So again, this my collection goes through waves.
Yeah.
In 2014, when Legendary came out with their fresh new Godzilla movie, that kind of got me back into Godzilla again. Hard. Like I remember growing up, like I would watch you know, the old Toho movies, like on television as a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, you know, guy in a rubber suit beating the shit out of other monsters. This is awesome.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen those films in years. So that got me into Godzilla. And I started slowly phasing out my Voltron collection, and I started collecting Godzilla stuff, mm-hmm. starting with like SH Monster Arts. And then I discovered X Plus, which were like bigger, more detailed. They were more expensive. I was also in the process of getting married at the time. We needed money for the wedding. So I sold off my entire Voltron collection.
Yeah. What are you doing? Yeah.
I'm glad I did, because at the time I made a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
So, and then I think I had been following James Grohman for a long time. Because now we're getting into soft vinyl territory.
Okay.
Safubi, whatever term you want to use for it. I remember I found him again on Instagram when he was in the process of doing his King Corp sculpt. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. What's this about? And then I found a bunch of soft vinyl Godzilla toys. And I'm like, oh, these are cool. Why are they hundreds of dollars?
Yeah.
What's the appeal? And then I got my first, I'll never forget it. It was my first soft vinyl toy. It was the giant marmot Desugoji. I mean, the thing was like this big.
Yeah.
It was big. It was like a translucent painted vinyl. It was really cool. And from that moment on, I was like, shit. All right. Well, then I sold off gradually all of my SH Monster Arts and X Plus. And then I started collecting only soft vinyl Godzilla toys.
That's so specific.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at that point, we just finished paying off our wedding. You know, we were in the process of moving. I had other financial obligations. So I'm like, all right, I need to narrow down what I collect to one thing specifically that I can kind of focus on. And again, going back to Instagram and Facebook and other social media, joining like groups, collector groups, fan groups and stuff like that from like 2015, 2016 on, that's when I started getting into like the groups for like Godzilla and other toys, started meeting and befriending a bunch of cool people, and went back on Instagram, and I created a secondary page, Instagram page for my collecting. And that's when I started noticing more like original designer toys. Okay. And I'm like, oh, what are these? Who's this? What are they making? And then I am now fully entrenched in designer toys, original designer soft vinyl
toys. Yeah.
And that was a whole nother rabbit hole. So now I started collecting those. And, you know, being introduced to that world was, you know, it's, the fandom is so rabid, and you know, you're dealing with toys that are mostly like exclusive in nature. Like,
yeah,
people and it's are hosting bonkers. Lotteries for them. Yeah, like the it's like, oh, I really want this toy. Oh, there's a lottery that you have to enter. Oh, there's only 10 of these made. Well, I have to have this.
Yeah.
So like, I started entering lotteries and winning these toys, and like gradually over time, a lot of the artists I started collecting from, you know, develop a bit of a friendship with them through like Instagram messages. And one artist in particular, I've been collecting the majority of his stuff since like the beginning, Boda Studios.
Uh-huh.
Boda, you ever see his stuff?
I think so. The name sounds familiar.
He had a display.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsoring Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSONTAP10. Empire Blisters.
Empire Blisters.
Some of his stuff was it OMO Market. They were displaying some of his toys towards like the back of Decon.
Cool.
Like what he's doing is he is one of the few artists who's like inspired me to like maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
Because like the stuff that he was doing was so different comparably to what I saw everybody else was doing. I mean, just really pushing the limits with like detail and texture and layers and multiple pieces, as opposed to your typical simple traditional like upright figure. Like his kind of like when I look at his toys, they tell me a story.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating. You know, if you're creating an original toy, and that's kind of the route I took with my toy. Like I didn't just want to collect something for the sake of it being cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that helps, but you know, when it came time for me to make my own toy, I'm like, I want there to be purpose behind its design.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, let me throw everything in the kitchen sink at it. Like something's got to work and appeal to somebody.
Yeah. I am interested in, I mean, it's always a funny jump from, I noticed Soft Vinyl or Sufubi.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed the designer Soft Vinyl or Sufubi. Mm-hmm. I made my own. So yeah. Like getting to the designer one, you start becoming friends. Tell me about the conversation basically with your own self of now I want to make.
So at the time, I want to say, I think sometime back in late 2018, early 2019, like I was maybe just a couple years into collecting Soft Vinyl.
Okay.
And I gave it a moment's thought, like, I wonder if I designed something. Like a part of me kind of knew it would be an expensive process. I didn't even think of anything else beyond that. But I knew, I'm like, all right, maybe I could start small. It's like, I know a lot of people start with resin first and they do that. And quite honestly, that never interested me.
Yeah.
Just like, there are like a lot of tremendous resin toy makers aren't that. It's just not an appealing thing to me.
Right.
Mostly because of its fragility. That's my issue with it.
Okay.
Like, I know like they only make a limited amount of those and God forbid, like, and like at the time we moved a lot. I'm like, all I need is for this thing to get crushed and like I would be devastated.
Oh, disheartening.
So Soft Vinyl, like I could pick this up and throw it and I'm like, it's still fine. But a part of me thought, all right, maybe I could at least kind of go the resin route, start with something small, simple, that's interesting and see how it kind of goes.
Okay.
But at that point in my tattoo career, that's when I really started to take off. I was getting booked out more and more. I didn't really have much time to, again, going back to resin, like I didn't have time to dedicate to sculpting and making molds and then casting and playing around with all that, those steps, and then painting. I'm like, there's just too much involved for that. I don't have time for right now. Cause me, I'm an all or nothing person. Like I'm either going to go into this 100% or not at all. But I did have a couple of friends at the time that were in the process of, or in some cases had already gone into making Soft Vinyl toys or their first like toys. And they kind of explained to me like the process a little bit, what to expect. And I was like, all right, I know it's going to be expensive. I know it's going to take time. Let me take a little more time to kind of think on it. I slowly started setting money away for this back in just before COVID. And then COVID hit. And once we were able to reopen the tattoo shop again, I mean, I was book solid continuously for years after that.
Yeah. It is a crazy influx where someone just turns on the tap. Yeah.
And I want to say back in 2022, towards the end of that year, at that point, like, you know, because I'm friends with Octeel, like I knew he was getting ready to make his Kaiju Cream.
Which I knew crazy.
Like, yeah, fucking, man, he's killing it. And I couldn't be more happy or proud of him for like the risk he took, and it pays off. And it's so awesome to see that from a friend's perspective, to see someone else be successful at what they're doing. And same thing with like what Bogle's doing. And like, I had a few other friends, like, I can't really disclose too much because they're working personally with Toho to make things, but like everyone I knew was like making toys.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've had this urge. I've already started a little nest egg. And I remember I came home with my wife from her in-laws for like Thanksgiving. And I remember like she went to bed and I couldn't sleep. I went into my toy display room and I just fell to the floor and I grabbed a broken Micron and a sketch pad I had lying. I'm laying on the floor like this at an angle.
Like a child.
Yeah, I was a little drunk too. I was like, I had some Jameson in me. So I made this sketch from the sketch I had made 2 years prior. I was like, let me elaborate on this idea.
Okay.
And I'll let it go. And then in the morning, I'll look at it and reevaluate my options and see where to go from there. Mm-hmm. Through a good buddy of mine, Nick Sides, he introduced me to Chris and Wes of Last Bastion.
Love those guys.
Yeah, they're fucking awesome. But I guess Chris had asked Nick if he knew of anyone who was interested in producing or making a toy. So he told him about me. And then I had already been following them. Like, I think at the time I even had like one of Chris's Ragnar toys. So we exchanged numbers, and at this point, like, I had a good rough sketch drawn together, a couple different versions of it. We arranged a call. You know, we were on the phone, like, Chris and I, he's like the little brother I never had. Like, when we got on the phone together, it was just bah, 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 like for fucking 2 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was very encouraging, and he was impressed that the amount of work I had done already, the things that I had already taken upon myself to kind of figure out. But I'm like, I still need guidance and direction. Like, I have no idea really where to go with my idea. Like, it still needs to be like sculpted. And at the time, I mean, based on all the detail, like, I have some background in sculpting, but as far as taking a sculpture and turning it into something that would be able to pull effectively without any damages or issues in soft vinyl, I didn't want to take on that just yet. I was like, it'd just be easier to do something digitally. So he's like, he explained to me the whole digital sculpting process. And I had another friend of mine who was doing that at the time. And he and I had spoke about it a couple years previously. And, artistically speaking, he and I get along really well. He goes by Art of Slugbat. That's who sculpted my toy for me. So we spent about a year going back and forth. Like, I would send him a bunch of like my turns and sketches, and other like references that I found, because like a lot of our work is very textural. That's what I really like. Just different textures and movements with the rest of the figure. So we took about a year's time back and forth. Like, he would do a little bit of the sculpt and then send me like a digital update.
Yeah.
So then I would go in and I would make my adjustments, be like, all right, this needs to be bigger. Let's get rid of that and put this here instead. Da 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 da. And then finally I had a sculpt. We finished it and then sent it off to Chris. And there was some back and forth yet where thankfully he was like, all right, well, you need to change this. This isn't possible to do unless you want to have, like, for the flower hand here. See,
yeah,
that little piece. So when I initially came up with that concept, I wanted it to be more open with like different layers,
but bubbles and stuff. Like,
yeah, he's like, well, you can't do that in one piece. You're gonna have to do it in multiple pieces, and then you're gonna have to glue it all together. And I was like, fuck that. Because I still wanted this to have some semblance of that traditional soft vinyl aesthetic to it.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted something that was big and detailed, but not overly complicated, something that would display really well on a shelf without taking up too much space.
Yeah.
And there were some other little tweaks and adjustments we made. And even then, like, we weren't really 100% certain if the factory was going to be able to pull this without it tearing every other time. So we sent it to the factory and they came through in spades. And it worked out really well. And it was a long process. I mean, from concept to having a test pull in hand was about 2.5 years time.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. But it was well worth it. I mean,
you did two things with this piece that I am always so pumped when I see it. Mm-hmm. Not only is it a great sculpt and some kind of elephant behemoth that I love, it has a weapon in its hand, and it comes with a little shaman.
Yeah, the little priestess figure right here. Yeah.
It reminds me of the game Rampage.
Yes.
And it's like there's just like little people around.
They have the little dance at the end.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it is like there's just these random things that are always around. You can hit them and stuff, but they were like there to praise the kaiju or the monster. And it is such a unique take and way to add depth to it without story.
Well, that's the thing. Going back to the design process, there were a couple things, like my first iterations of this, that I weren't 100% happy with. So
yeah.
I actually took it upon myself to at least develop some form of lore and story behind Ivereth. And that kind of helped me kind of finesse a few things. So like every bit of detail that's packed into this, like, it's there for a reason. It has a purpose. I mean, talking about inspiration that I took from movies and animated shows and whatnot, like around the time when I first made my first sketch of this concept, I had also, because it was, you know, end of fall, winter was coming. Like, I watched The Thing recently.
Yeah.
And I liked the concept of the fact that you didn't really know what the thing was.
Yeah.
It was sort of this like amalgamation of these weird creatures that it had come into contact with at some point that it mimicked. So that's kind of the story behind my kaiju, is that like all this like drippy, oozy stuff.
Yeah.
That's the actual kaiju itself. It's actually this like black sludge like ooze that seeps up from, you know, below the surface of the planet, and it can sort of mimic and turn into whatever, like organic matter, creature, what have you. And this kaiju, it's basically like Mother Nature's, like it's nature's protector.
Yeah.
So whether it's, you know, natural disaster, man-made, or like havoc from another kaiju, this thing rises from the depths and it turns itself into whatever it needs to complete whatever task and objective it has.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, I took a lot of reference from like real life, nature, aquatic photos of all different like animal and plant species. Like, I love incorporating like organic matter, biomechanical, bioorganic elements into my designs. So, it definitely helped me come up with a storyline to finish making this be what it needed to be without it being too much.
Yeah.
Or like there were a couple design elements I had initially incorporated where like I wanted to have like a whole bunch of like jewels and stuff like growing out of its exoskeleton rib panel. But I'm like, that's just too much.
Yeah.
So I mean, I was like, you know, we'll limit it.
What's so fun about the idea is if the kaiju is this like black ooze and that's not the actual kaiju, like that's just its form. Technically, you can make anything. Yep. Always call it the same name because it's just the form it took.
I mean, at some point I would like to do like an alternate head and maybe like another alternate hand or arm piece and just kind of gradually make some subtle changes here and there. that's something I want to eventually play around with at some point to expand on that concept, which I think would be really cool.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's
so
the amount of time I put into that, like,
it's insane.
I'm so happy with how it came out.
Yeah. Toys take so much time to make, mm-hmm. and you experience the joy for a little bit when you get it, but then it's like, gotta sell it, gotta table, gotta go. So yeah. Tell me about your first time tabling at DesignerCon. I know that Wes and Chris do this cool thing where they – how they interact with people, I've taken and I've extremized it, like, for my own self of, like, wherever I go, if we've, in, like, had work together, you're coming with me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm bringing everyone with me. And it's like they do that.
Those guys, I owe them the world for that. Because I'm not the type of person where I'm going to assume that, you want me to tag along to a convention? Okay, well, what do you need from me?
Yeah.
And they're like, bring your shit and have a good time.
Yeah,
and
let's,
like,
go. Let's move.
Well,
yeah.
Well, how much is the booth? They're like, don't fucking worry about it.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Yeah, like, yes. Like, we helped you. We're here to help you. We're happy for you. Let's get it out into the world. So I actually, before DCon, and this was right around the time I think you first messaged me, I was getting ready to do G-Fest.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I mean, even going back to that, like, when I first got my shipment in, I mean, I had like 7 gigantic boxes that were like enormous.
Yeah. How many did you order?
Just under 150.
Okay. Okay. So but big order.
Yes and no. I mean, when I first told Chris, like, how many, like, I had 5 different colorways that I ordered.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, so you're thinking like 50, maybe like 100. I'm like, I was thinking maybe like 10 to 25. And he's like, that's going to be really expensive. Like,
yeah,
I'm like, I don't care. Like, I don't have the space to hold, yeah, like 1,000 toys. Like, I know it's going to be a huge shipment, even because, I mean, this whole thing between the kaiju, the mini, and the weapon, I mean, that's 15 pieces. So I'm like,
that's,
I have to go
bonkers, because yeah, that means you're like 3 mold plates.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, yeah, I mean, when I travel with this thing, like, I have to completely disassemble it.
And oh, yeah,
piece it together in a hotel room.
It was funny watching your guys' booth. I don't know who was behind the table, but it was like, I'm talking to Neil, and over his shoulder, I see someone with a heat gun and, like, popping things in.
Oh, that was me, most likely. Yeah. that was me, most likely. Especially Sunday, I got there extra early.
Yeah.
Partially like disassemble some stuff just so I didn't have to do it at the end of the night. Cause I mean, I've built and taken apart so many of these fucking things. I have it down, yeah, to a science, but it still takes time. But going back to G-Fest and like Chris and Wes, I knew they had a table and I was like, you know, hey, I don't want to intrude, but I mean, would you guys want me to like bring a couple to like have at the table? And they're like, dude, bring however many you want. Like, you're at the table. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So I didn't really know what to expect. So I wanted to at least have a social media presence. So like I had started my Instagram account for that back in, I think, towards the end of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly started to get the ball rolling and interest rolling. So before G-Fest, I had my first lottery. I wanted to at least have one lottery and hopefully get my stuff out in time to collectors' hands so they could kind of help promote it and share the toy. So I could be like, hey, look what I'm bringing. So I did the Meat Marble as the first lottery. And I brought the remainder of what I had from the lottery and some the green blanks. That are my exclusive with Last Bastion. I wanted to have something that's like a partnership with them. So I only brought 10 mm-hmm. to G-Fest. And I was under the impression I wasn't going to, like, if I sold one, I would have been happy. Because have you ever been to G Fest?
No, but I do know about it.
It's wild.
Yeah.
I mean, half the interactions I got were either like, why is this here?
Yeah.
At a Godzilla show, or this is the coolest thing I've ever fucking seen.
Yeah.
So I sold out at G Fest,
which crazy.
I was completely blown away by. I was like, thank God, because I don't have to pack all this shit again. But so that was like a good confidence boost for me. I'm like, okay, I brought this to a show where, like, you know, you're talking about like 8 to 10 year old kids running around being happy they bought Bandai Godzillas, and they want nothing to do with this, but people still liked it. A lot of people came up to me. You know, I had some friends who were there that like bought one as like, you know, to help support because they also really liked it. And then random just attendees that would like stop dead in their tracks and be like, oh, tell me about this. What is this? So that was a cool experience. And then I did Assembly Required in Philly back in, I think that was August. And that was, I mean, compared to G-Fest, I mean, that was such a small scale show, but awesome show regardless. I mean, I met a ton of new cool people there. Even the guys, like, you know, the people that host that event were awesome. But I felt like I at least wanted to try and do one more event leading up to DCon to kind of help prepare myself a bit, because DCon was insane. I mean, it's like I'm only just starting to get my voice back from that weekend. It's wild.
Yeah, we did a, we were talking nonstop, dude. Like I especially, there's a part of me that wants to just be the toy maker and talk because then you're talking about just the toy. But because of the podcast and because of anything else that we dabble in.
I was going to say, yeah, you dabble in a bunch of stuff. So
dude, it's nonstop. So it's like
topic after topic.
Yeah, my voice, it was fine because I work with middle school and I'm constantly going. But it was just on Saturday, I didn't sit down once and I didn't stop talking once, which was a good and bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no clue at all what to expect. So I think I brought 20, and then I had Octeel brought his painted one off, and then I brought another painted one off from Beastman Toys.
Sick.
And then JC Toys, who goes by Careless Painter, he was boothed with Frank Mysterio. I had sent him a limited run to paint months ago, and he's like, they're about finished. I was like, and I knew he was going to DCon. I said, well, I'm going to be there this year. If you want to bring one, if you have room, I was like, by all means, bring it. He's like, I'll promote it. I'll promote you. And I think it would be a good way for us to get some more exposure and bring more people to you and me and my booth. And so that, I think I had 23 total. I wasn't sure what to expect. I didn't want to bring too little, but I also didn't want to bring like too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And mainly because I couldn't fit anymore in my fucking suitcase. Because I got there Thursday and immediately got, you know, was able to check into my hotel room. I went right upstairs.
Just
and
I'm get there to work.
And just start, you know, I burn out their hairdryer in that hotel room like three times.
Yeah.
Because it was like one of those shitty, cheap wall-mounted ones. So I'm sitting there by the sink like, in waves, piecing one after the other after the other. And then I had to bag and tag and header card and piece all that together and get them ready. But I did that at the show because I didn't even think about it. I was like, how the fuck am I going to get all 20 plus of these things from the hotel to the convention center?
Yeah.
So a buddy of mine was staying on the same floor. He was also helping me build these fucking things. And his room, he had two beds, one of which he wasn't using. So I fucking yanked one of his bed sheets off. And I, like Santa Claus, just stack piled them onto this bed sheet and wrapped them in a sack, slung them over my shoulder. And away we went. And Friday, Saturday, Sunday of just DCon was just a whole different level of experience for a convention. I had an incredible time. Like,
yeah,
even if I went there and I sold one, like I would have it would have been worthwhile just because I finally had the chance to meet like so many people like I've, you know, befriended through Instagram, whether they're collectors or people that have purchased, you know, previous lotteries from me for this. So it was cool to like meet those people in person, face to face, have an actual conversation. Other toy makers and artists that like I've looked up to and respected for years that like I've now had the chance to like meet and engage in conversation with. And like, it's such a cool community of people. Like the level of camaraderie within the soft vinyl community is insane to me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, it's like anything else. You're going to have your little like cliques and, you know, there's always like little drama here and there, but for the most part, everyone was awesome.
Yeah.
Like I had the best time meeting so many awesome people.
I mean, now that you've done all these, you've had a sellout at G-Fest, mm-hmm. you tabled at Designer Con, you have a rad figure that mm-hmm. has some like one-off paints with some artists and you mm-hmm. blanks and everything. Dude, what's next?
I mean, I feel at this point, I mean, this is still taking off. Like,
yeah.
The interest has been consistently growing, especially now since D-Con. Like I sold a little more than half of what I brought to D-Con, and then I was going to post like a leftover sale like most everybody does through Instagram. Before I even got back to my hotel room Sunday night, I had like multiple people messaging me asking if I had anything left over, mm-hmm. wanting to buy stuff. I sold everything else on Instagram in like a day and a half.
Awesome.
And I had a bunch of new followers. I had a bunch of new people message me like, when's your next lottery? When's the next release? What's next? Everyone wants to know what's next. I'm still riding the wave on this one.
Yeah.
I just got her in. It's awesome. You know, it's like every week I get like a new followers and new requests, people wanting to know when the next release is. Like I have a bunch more collaborations and releases planned, but my initial order run through I'm almost done with.
Okay.
So I definitely got to reach out to the factory. I got to put another order in of some, you know, more blanks, new colorways.
An
eventual goal is to produce more. Like I would like to, because I have my next two toys planned already, like sketched, ready to go. I'm going to be working with my buddy Slugbat again to design and sculpt digitally my second one. And then I think my third one, I'm going to try my hand at hand sculpting just because I think aesthetically it's going to fit the vibe of that one more.
Mm-hmm.
That night, like I've been slowly but surely kind of tinkering with clay again and trying to better my sculpting skills at what I think I need. Level I need to be at, because I mean I've set such a high bar with Ibarath already that I feel like I need to match that. So hopefully within the next year I would love to get my second one produced. It's not going to be as huge or elaborate as this one, but I'm pretty excited about it. It's another concept I've had it drawn and ready to go for like even before this was done. I was like, I have the itch now and the interest is there and I'm having a great time doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's something I would eventually like to continue doing more of. That's definitely the next step, is hopefully I can set aside some more money again, get production going again on my second one.
Yeah.
Like I would love to start painting myself. I mean, just, the issue right now is like my current living condition. I don't really have the space or room to like paint myself, which is why I've been doing these collabs. But that's been going really great. And I'm eternally thankful for all the artists that have contributed or in some cases reached out and wanted to paint my toy. Mm-hmm. And like that, just it's all overwhelming to me. Like this is all still like new and I'm taking everything in. And so far, like the overall reception has been awesome. And that makes me feel less like shit after spending tens of thousands of dollars to get this thing made.
Yeah.
And investing so much time and effort and passion into it. And people are, they're like, dude, this is awesome. Like, when can we get one? Can we get one? I want one. And that's awesome to hear. As an artist and a creator, it's like It's one thing you've put all this love and energy into creating something that you're thrilled with, but to have other people say that, other collectors, peers who you respect that have been doing this far longer and far better than I have, like, they're like, dude, this is awesome. You should keep doing it. I'm going to. Like, that's what's next. I want to push through. I want to continue to do it. So that's the next step.
Dude, heck yeah. That's it. That's so much stuff. The last part of the podcast is always how people can find you, self-promotion, all that stuff. So please plug all the stuff if people want to get their hands on this beauty of a piece.
At this point in time, you can follow me on Instagram at Mad World Toys. Turn your post notifications on. I usually do a teaser through posts and stories leading up to each lottery. Like I kind of mentioned before, like, I have a limited supply of these. And at this point, most of my painted collab runs that I do, you know, it either ranges from a one-off or a small run of 3 to 5. So, other than that, like the occasional blank lotteries I did, like my marble blanks, I did the Meat Marble one, I had the Halloween. Like, I made 25 of these. These are all sold out. My Halloween, I only did, I think, came out to an odd number of 21. Those are all gone. Like I said, I do need to order more colorways for next year. So that's pretty much what I'm going to be doing is lotteries through Instagram for the one-offs and blanks. But yeah, following my page at Mad World Toys is the best way to keep up to date with everything I'm doing. Like I said, my goal is to make more toys. That's something I would absolutely love to do. And that's the best way to follow what I'm doing through my Instagram page. I also have, I have two other Instagram accounts because I have one for my tattoo business page.
Hey, drop the address. I'm going to look it up right now.
And it's just my name at Adam Pasquale.
Great.
So if you're interested in tattoos, you see what you like and you live in Pennsylvania, hit me up.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
And I have another page that's strictly for my own personal vinyl toy collection. And that's at AP Sofubi.
Heck yeah. There we go.
That's so I'm all about over the social media. And again, just, you know, the response to this has just been overwhelming and it's been awesome and it makes me feel great about it. I love that, you know, the messages I'm getting from collectors. Like, first of all, most people, they don't realize how big she is.
Yeah, seeing it
like, this is a huge bonkers toy.
Yeah.
So when I get messages from people that just get like their package in and they're like, holy shit, like, I, you know, they were expecting like a little 7 to 9 inch toy. I'm like, no, this thing's enormous.
Yeah.
You know, it's about a foot tall. And again, you know, you get the little, you get a cool little weapon and a little minifigure. You get a cool little sticker set. And for the Meat Marble release, I did custom drawstring backpacks with like the logo printed on it. It's like a fun little extra. Ideally, I would like to do some of that stuff again. I just didn't really have time and they're really expensive to do.
Yeah.
The goal is just, you know, to continue to have fun. Like I said, like creating this toy was like the first time in a long time where I had inspiration to be creative and make something for me for once. And I am so thankful that I did. And again, I want to give a huge shout out to Chris and Wes at Last Bastion. I mean, their assistance and helping me get to this point, like, I'm forever, forever grateful for them for doing that. It's been an awesome ride so far.
Yeah.
And it's cool too. At DCon, I ran into a young collector who came up to our booth and was like asking us a bunch of questions and like, cause he was interested in making his own toy and like, he pulled out his backpack. He had this cool little like dinosaur creature that like he made out of like resin. And he was like, I'm really thinking like, I'd love to make this into a soft vinyl toy. So like me and Wes, like everyone at the booth, like we all kind of gave him like our input and experience and knowledge about everything. And I like, to me, that's the coolest thing about this community. It's just the camaraderie behind everybody. Like, you have an idea, you have a creative urge to make a toy yourself, fucking do it. Like, this is like the best thing I've done for me in a long time. And it can be overwhelming, but like, reach out to people, ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Like, you'd be surprised at how willing and eager people are to help you if you're genuinely cool person, you're a cool collector, you have ideas, you have integrity, and you have just the will to want to make something cool. Do it. Fucking do it. It's awesome.
That's the tagline for the show. Dude, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap.
Yes, thank you for having me, man. I'm so glad you're finally able to get this done.